Welcome to the Chasing the Truth. I'm so excited for today's guest, and I always say this, that I'm always excited, but this one is very special, and his name is Josh Anderson, and this is going to be a very unique podcast, one that I haven't done before. It's an interview like no other, because I've only met him, you, twice now in real life. But just a couple of accolades for Josh Anderson. I actually had you saved in my phone as Josh the pilot for like 20 years. And then just recently, I feel like I should probably put a last name. But in the studio with us today, we have Josh Anderson. So a couple of your accolades. So the listeners know who we're listening to. Josh Anderson, you've been been to 107 countries.
I have. Yep.
You've lived in China for 7 years, and you've flown over 10,000 hours flight time. That's pretty crazy. I don't know if people really understand that. And then I have some other ones that are really cool. I'm going to end off with that. But I've known you for 20 years and only met you twice. And I always say, like, it's kind of a serendipitous moment. But also, it's not such a serendipity because, like, we've been friends for so long. And there's always a reason for friendships. I met you twice. Yep. But you've flown for 4 of the world's top 10 ultra high net worth individuals.
Sure have.
That's literally insane. And also too, like, I feel like when you're around those types of people, like your mind, like you as a person, you have to grow. So I'm really excited to kind of unpack that, of what that chase, what that grind looked like for you, and the successes and the truths that you've seen in your own life and also in the lives that you've been able to witness. So that's going to be really cool to unpack. And then recently, help me out with this, because you said set a World City Pair world record last week.
Yeah, so I guess between every city pair in the world, there's either been someone who's never flown that route before, or someone who's flown it and then someone who's flown it faster. And we were like the first people who've ever flown actually from Taipei to Austin nonstop.
Wow.
So to even have an aircraft that's capable of doing that is one thing. And then to be able to do it and accomplish it with the perfect weather, the perfect winds, you know, the perfect pilots, so on and so forth. Like, we did that. So, and then we filed a record with the NAA, which is the National Aeronautical Association out of Washington, D.C., and then they certified it. So
this is like official.
Oh, it's official. Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. When we were texting, for me as like a outsider that doesn't know hardly anything about flying or being a pilot or the logistics, all I know is that the person that I'm getting on the plane with, like, I have to trust with my life, right? But there's just so much to it. And to see you sitting here, I was like, so actually, with all of the things that you've accomplished, I'm basically in the presence of royalty, is what it comes down to.
I wish.
Yeah. No, that's the way I feel because of what you've accomplished. And then also just the person that you are. And I've had a chance, and like you said, the power of social media is just to be able to witness what your life has been over the last 20 years. And there's just like this mutual level of respect, I feel, between our friendship. And so I'm really excited to get to know you better just in your levels of success. What stirred that as far the whole, like, the record that you set last week? Was it just like, this is something that I've always wanted to accomplish? Or is it just like, yeah, what the heck, we'll go for it?
Yeah, so the manufacturers actually publish them on their websites or they publish them on their social media. And it's sort of like a bragging rights, you know, from like one big manufacturer to another, like Gulfstream versus like Bombardier, for example.
Okay.
And a lot of my friends have done this in the past. And I was sort of interested in like, well, maybe we have an opportunity to get one, you know, ourselves. And, you know, Taipei to Austin is sort of a rare route. You know, it's not like London to, you know, New York City, for example, that's heavily traveled. And I was like, I'm not sure how many people have actually flown from Taipei to Austin nonstop, so we might as well like just send out the inquiry and let it come back and see if someone's done it. And if they've done it, let's see how fast they've done it and see if we can beat it. So we did, and now we hold that record.
And so when you say we, is that just you and a co-pilot?
No, we actually fly with three captains and one flight attendant. So there's 4 of us on the airplane, just due to the duty day. And you know, we have a cabin attendant who prepares amazing chef food.
I'm sure you've seen all my stories. Which I've seen on the story. Yeah. I was like, that is gourmet
dining. Shout out to Nina. Yeah, it's amazing.
Gourmet dining that you get on that experience. Yeah. So what is the flight time for that?
Just over 13 hours total time. And that includes the taxi time on both ends. Taxi time is the time it takes, you know, to drive from the ramp to the runway. Okay. And then total flight time was around 13 hours. So it was quite the journey.
Yeah. And now you're official.
Official. First time.
Wow, that is so cool. Yeah. Well, besides, let's peel back the layers a bit from when we first met. So just to give the listeners a peek behind the curtain for that, I think I was like maybe 17 or 18, and I was like about to graduate high school, and you were a pilot on the plane, and it was just that was actually my first flight by myself.
Nice.
Independently, yeah. And so I'm like, you know, grown up, flying on my own. Meanwhile, you were like the youngest pilot for
Continental Express.
Yes, okay.
So before United Airlines bought Continental Airlines, they had Continental Express, which was like the regional airline that flew to your hometown,
yeah.
Brownsville, McAllen, yeah. You know, South Texas. And I had just graduated from flight school. And, you know, I went straight out of high school. I didn't go the traditional university route.
Yeah.
I went to flight school first and then university later. So I was able to actually get a job as a 19-year-old. And by the time I think we met, I think I was like 20. But
yeah.
I was, you know, one of the youngest co-pilots.
I was like, oh, he's got to be for sure like 25 or something. And you were like 20. Like, you couldn't even have alcohol at the time.
I couldn't. They used to schedule me to fly to Mexico all the time just so I could have a normal life.
Yeah. So, that's too funny. But, wow. So what spurred that on for you just to go and be a pilot first rather than the traditional route?
I think like when I was 16, my grandma asked me what I wanted for my birthday. And my one of my best friends' his father was a corporate pilot for Russell Stover's Candies, of all things, the founders of that brand.
Yeah.
And I always sort of like looked up to him, you know, I was like, oh, I kind of want to be your dad when I get older.
Yeah.
And or be like, your dad when I get older. And so, you know, I looked it up in the phone book at the time, the Yellow Pages, not to date myself or to date you. And, you know, I looked up the local flight school and I called them and it was just like, you know, hey, how do I take a flight lesson? And they were just like, oh, come on down. It's like $60. And that changed everything for me. So you do it once and, you know, you sort of get, you know, the bug is what we call it and addicted to it. And I started taking lessons like every month. My grandma would let me go do like maybe one or two lessons. And then I knew by the time I was a senior in high school that I wanted to make a career out of it. So I started Googling like, you know, flight schools, and they all just happened to be in either Arizona or Florida for the most part due to the nice weather. And you could train in the wintertime. And so we took a trip down there my senior year. And, you know, we interviewed like four flight schools and I chose one, and that was it. I went and knocked it out. And you know, I'm quite the hustler. So I, you know, started networking super quickly with all these like airline recruiters and, you know, so on and so forth, and had a job by the time I was almost turning 20. So, which was a first of its kind, because most of them, you had to be 21 to get a job. Mm. There was only two that hired under 21, and I got a job with Continental Express. So they gave me my big break, which was amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. But also too, like, you know, because so many people are like, yeah, I like to fly, or that's kind of interesting, or they have some sort of interest in aviation. Mm-hmm. But to take it from that little like, yeah, I'm kind of interested, to the level that you're at now, like so many things had to have happened. But also, like you said, you're a hustler, and that's part of it too, is like you have to be willing to hustle, like sacrifice, right, to be able to get to where you are today. And I just want to keep painting the picture for the audience of like of the level of success, because it's very hard to grasp, because even as like your friend and just like outside looking in, you see a pilot, and most of the time what we see as a pilot is like, yeah, commercial airlines, right. You know, and you're like, oh cool, that's, you know, from Southwest or whatever, like yes. And it's, you're like totally not to like, that's, I'm not, I don't want to say anything negative about those, because you know that's what I fly and
me too.
They keep us safe, you know.
Me too.
But also to take it past that and to be where you're at today, like it's just, I don't know if the audience will truly grasp the level of success that you've accomplished. But what are some of the things that you did, you look at the career like, okay, if I'm gonna do this, I want to be the best? Has that always been a part of you?
I didn't necessarily know what I wanted. So okay. I was so young. I was just happy to get like my first jet job, you know,
and yeah.
I was, you know, I was sort of like did that for like a couple of years until I could get some flight hours to qualify for a better jet job. And so like I switched airlines actually after a couple of years and went to a different, you know, airline, and I was there for 5, and then I got to upgrade as a captain for the first time in my life. So you go from
that's
like,
that's got to be a big deal.
It's a huge deal, especially like, you know, in your 20s. You go from like being the guy with 3 stripes to the guy with 4 stripes, which is a pretty big deal as an airline guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, being, you know, young and not so confident to like getting all this confidence and like instantly being the boss for the first time in your life, you know, or a manager of some sort. Mm. It's kind of like a rite of passage. you know, for most pilots. So that happened to me at the age of 25. I was an airline captain for the first time.
And what dictates being an airline captain? Is it hours of flight time?
It's a little bit of hours, total time, as we call it. You have to have a certain amount of total time to qualify for the license. It's an air transport pilot license called ATP. And then also a lot of luck, because it's a seniority-based system, too. So, you know, the airline has to have a lot of turnover or a lot of growth to sort of move you up the ranks. You know, you go from being a junior first officer to a senior first officer to a junior captain to then a senior captain. So, you know, it just takes time. You know, it took me about 5 years. And, of course, 2008 hit. The economy set me back. And then the U.S. changed the law. So from the retirement age for airline pilots, which age 60, then they kicked the can down the road and changed it to 65. So everyone who was about to retire literally stayed for 5 more years, which sort of set me back. But, you know, I just kept doing what I was doing, and I got my opportunity, and I just ran with it as fast as I could.
Yeah. First of all, being, a pilot in the commercial space, it's very similar to the military, it seems like. Like, there's ranks.
To an extent. It's very repetitive, actually. You know, so like an airline, you know, especially a regional airline, you fly to like the same, let's just say maybe 30 to 40 cities, you know, within the continental U.S., maybe Canada, Mexico, maybe like the Caribbean. Yeah. But like, you know, you're not flying for like United Airlines or like American Airlines. You're not going overseas. You're not doing all of that. I aspired to do all of that, but it was just a matter of getting to that job, which was going to be like the next level in my life. Yeah. And then beyond that, there's like FedEx, there's UPS, there's cargo, you know, there's military.
I didn't even think about
that. Yeah, there's like just so much opportunity out there. And then, you know, being an airline guy, I always saw all these business jets everywhere we flew. And I was like, oh, those are small jets. Maybe that's not something I would want to do. But I didn't know that that was actually like the secret to like happiness. So,
in the industry. You
know, in the industry. Yeah. For me, you know, that's the way I see it.
What are some of the pros and cons of being a pilot?
The pros and cons of being a pilot. Yeah. The pros and cons of being an airline pilot is your family can fly standby. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're married, your spouse's family can fly for standby, you know, like their parents. And standby is in if there's an open seat, you can go. Some people wait like 1 to 2 days for that open seat to go to Paris. But, you know, sometimes the flights are completely empty and, you know, it's nice to get a, you know, maybe a $10,000 ticket for free, you know, is what it would normally cost. But you get that benefit by being an employee. So that's kind of nice. You do get to travel the world. You know, you get room and board, you know, all your food's covered, all your hotels are nice. You know, you get to like, you know, see the world basically at someone else's expense, which is one of the the number one things that
bigger
you know
perks.
People love, you know, it's nice. So, and then to do that, like on the corporate side, you just get to see more of the world and, you know, stay at better hotels, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So.
Was that the motivating factor for you to continue to pursue different avenues of?
So I got bored of being an airline captain after about a year and a half of it. You know, I'd already been in the business for almost 7 years at that point. And Instagram was like just coming out. And like, you know, I was posting videos, you know, of like these really grainy photos, you know, on my Instagram. And like, you know, I was like the cool kid, like, you know, maybe one of the youngest captains in USA and started getting, quite a big, you know, following on my original Instagram account.
Yeah.
And this one individual by the name of Andreas reached out to me and he was like, hey, like you should come down to Miami. We're going to have like this big event. It's like kind of like Cars and Coffee, but it was I forget what it was called exactly, but it was something like Cars and Coffee. And I was like, wow, that sounds cool. I've never been to such a thing, you know, maybe I should go down there. So I happened to be in Miami. I'd just taken a job flying for the Miami Heat basketball team because I left my airline. I wanted to fly charter for the first time in my life. I wanted to fly a bigger airplane, like a Boeing 737.
So that was like the switch.
This was like the switch. Okay. So
year was that?
2012, 13.
Okay.
Somewhere in between there. So I was down in Miami, met this kid off of Instagram for the first time, and he takes me to this, you know, kind of like networking event, and I meet all of the other individuals who are like running charter business, you know, doing private jet sales, so on and so forth, and I start meeting these people and networking with them. And it was like not only like 2 days later, I got a random email like, hey, would you be interested in moving to Beijing, China for a job?
Wow.
And I was like, I've never been to China.
Is this real?
Like, is this real? You know, like you hear about these like scams on emails and stuff. And I'm like, hey, you know, we met you at the networking event. And, you know, with all of your experience and your age and like your look, you know, because they sort of like have a specific look over there. You know, like, would you be interested? And I've never been to China in my life. I've only like heard what I've heard, you know, like I was like scared, you know, like, I didn't even know how to get to China. And they were like, you know, we'll figure it out for you if you're interested. So I took that opportunity and it was about a 6-month interview process.
Wow.
And what I didn't know was a Chinese family, a billionaire family in China, a large pharmaceutical family. They were making cancer drugs for all around the world. They were buying their first business jet.
Wow.
And they were looking for their captain who, needed to be American. The airplane was going to be an American-made airplane.
Yeah.
And that was going to be my big break of, like, you know, moving overseas and, like, taking an international job. So I had plans of going over there for 1 year. I stayed for 7.
Yeah. Wow. So, life's funny.
Yeah. Life's funny. So wow, it was the best time of my life.
That's amazing. And I'm sure, you know, no regrets extending it past that, past that 1 year.
Yeah. Prior to that, I'd been to, I think, 4 countries in my entire life. And then the first 4 years we were there, we went to, I think, 48.
Wow.
So he was an aspiring photographer as a hobbyist for National Geographic China.
What a life. Like, not only are you having the opportunity to live this incredible life and go to all of these different countries, but you're also getting to take a glimpse into these families' lives and, like, how they
And they're so nice. They treated us so well. I mean, they would send us a random text message and say, hey, we want to go to Madagascar and take pictures of King Julian, you know, the lemur, you know, like from the movie, you know. So I was like, that's crazy. Okay, let's go, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
It was awesome. And I had the opportunity to hire someone from the airline that I had just left to be my co-pilot. And we were over there for together for, you know, the entire time. And he's actually still over there to this day.
Wow. Like seven. So, like,
he's now,
he was there for...
I left in 2020 during COVID, and he's, you know, 4 years later.
Stayed there.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I guess the opportunities that you can have, I didn't realize this, you know, just outside perspective of, like, oh, you want to be a pilot, like, these are the opportunities that you can have, right? I just always thought, like, commercial airline, this is what it is. But, yeah, and then, you know, cargo and all the things, like, just options.
I thought the same thing. I just, you know, networking changed everything for me.
Yeah, and you are, you see, I've met you now 3 times, but you seem to be, like, there's nobody that you would hesitate to have a conversation with.
Exactly. Yeah. Friends with everyone and mentor everyone.
Yeah. Were you always like that growing up, or you kind of came out of your shell?
I wasn't actually. I was pretty shy. Okay. I don't think I came out of my shell until I became an airline captain, actually. So
yeah, we were, like, forced to start to mingle
mingle with other people, and, you know, got my first, like, leadership role, you know, ever in my life, you know, being like a manager for the first time, and just sort of, like, you know, just grew.
And then you were
know?
Also so young, so you had to pull that out of you.
Yeah, it was, you know, because I had first officers, you know, when I was a young airline captain who were 64 years old, you know, and, like, you know, 2 flight attendants who were, like, you know, maybe in their 50s, you know, and they're all looking at you like, hey, captain, what are we going to do today? You know,
here, that, and also, like, you had to, I mean, there's a level of, like, having to show them some sort of respect, even though you're in a higher position, but they're older in age.
Absolutely. And I learned that. And it's, you know, it's kind of an acquired skill that you just learn over time. So
yeah, you're like, ooh, ruffle some feathers.
Okay, ruffle some feathers, yeah.
Let's run that back.
And I learned all of that from, like, the cool captains that I flew with for the 5 years that I was a first officer, which really helped me grow.
Yeah. So showed you that, like, grace. Yeah.
I knew when I got my call to, like, go to, like, you know, Captain Charm School, as they call it. Like,
Charm School?
Yeah. You know, I was like, okay, I'm ready. You know, it's time.
Yeah, so that's amazing. And also, too, like, being over there in China and getting to see people live at that level. One of the things that you mentioned when we had our conversation the other day, you said something along the lines, like, you know, being, I don't know if it was, like, the chef and then also the pilot, like, you guys have, I mean, they entrust so much of their lives in you, being a pilot. And then also if they have, like, any chefs too, like, they're the one of 2 people that could kill them. Is that what you said? Like,
I mean, you know, technically, yeah. It's, I mean, for a lot of these people, they you know, their pilot and their heart surgeon are their 2 most important people in their life, you know, because we're the only people, like, we have their lives in our hands at all times, you know, and you want a happy, you know, well-paid pilot, and you want a happy, well-paid, you know, heart surgeon, because at the end of the day, those 2 people, you know, if they make mistakes or they're fatigued or they're tired, you know, it could affect, you know, the family lineage, you know, if something bad were to happen. So
And so, like, taking on that level of responsibility as a pilot is huge.
It is, especially for those types of people, because the vetting process that you have to go through, not only through the security team, the background check, all of the flight hours, you know, what's this guy been doing for the last 10 years? Like, they really want to know.
Yeah.
So they get into your personal life, some of them do, and, you know, they want to just make sure that you're mentally stable and, you know, so on and so forth, and compatible too. So, and in China, they add a whole different level of compatibility via feng shui.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I had to learn all about that.
Yeah. Yeah, just totally different culture.
Yeah, I mean, they asked me in my interview, like, you know, what month were you born? What time of the day were you born? Like, all of that stuff. And they put that together and they were like, yeah, you're like you're a perfect match for our boss. And I was like, okay, great.
Interesting. Yeah. You're like, I thought it was just how I was going to interview.
It's way more than just opening up a fortune cookie.
Yeah, so, they're like, what time of day were you born?
They actually asked me that, so.
Interesting. Yeah.
I guess if you were born in the morning, like, you work harder? I don't know. But according to their culture, like, it means something to them. So.
I need to ask my mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I was born in the morning.
It was quite the learning curve, but I was all about it.
Yeah, yeah, so. And you and seem to embrace it.
I love it,
all levels. Yeah. Would you ever go back there?
I would definitely consider it. I would actually still be there today if it wasn't for COVID. So whenever COVID hit, you know, China sort of went into lockdown. The quarantine started off as 14 days. They went as long as 21 days.
Wow.
And so like anytime, like we would do an international flight, like even something so short, like, you know, China to Korea, you know, a 1.5 hour flight to come back that day, you'd have to go into isolation for 21 days. And I know some guys that did that for 9 months.
No way.
Yep.
So 21 days at a time.
21 days at a time. Yep. So it's like, I didn't really want to go through that, so I came back to the U.S. I figured it was time to like sort of segue back into the U.S. now that I had all these amazing like experiences and licenses and so on and so forth. And there was a couple tech companies in the Bay Area who were looking for someone who had a lot of China experience, who had the exact type ratings that I have, which are like the specific jets that I fly. And, you know, I meshed well with one and they hired me, so it was good.
Wow. You know, I guess the only way that I can think, because, you know, going to China for the first time, you've never flown over there.
Never.
So it's not like you know the routes or any of that. That in and of itself would make me nervous. But the only thing I can compare it to is like, I don't know, if I had to take a road trip to New York. And like, I've never driven over, and there's like so many different, that would make me nervous.
Yeah.
So I don't know how.
To add a layer to that, like imagine going to London, driving on the right side, and instead of miles per hour.
Wait, does that exist in the air?
You're right. But then like kilometers to miles, and then kilos to pounds, you know, like I was like completely thrown off in the beginning. And luckily I flew with a couple of like amazing individuals who were like, yeah, we could teach you all of that.
Okay.
So
yeah, they're like, you have enough experience to just transfer over.
Yes. And I actually got hired to be the lead captain, like straight out the gate. So like these guys were supporting me, and they like, you know, I basically was like, if you guys support me, like I'll hire you all to work for me. And so actually I did. So I gave them opportunity after they basically showed me the ropes, which was great.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's just part of who you are, of like paying it back.
It was sort of like sending the elevator back down. It made me feel so good, and they were so loyal to me for so long, which was amazing.
And that means the world, especially in that industry, loyalty.
Absolutely, yeah. And I made best friends out of it. I mean, we are absolute best friends. You know, we talk every day on the group chat. It's
Wait,
awesome.
Does that group chat still exist?
It still exists.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to this day.
Lifelong friends. I feel like you're good at making lifelong friends.
I am. That's like my thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, I have friends for over 20 years.
I didn't grow up with much family. I have a lot of friends.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome.
So, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. You have family, I guess, like family all over the world is what you can call it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, almost every country or major country that I can go to, or a major city, I can at least like hit up a buddy and be like, hey, you want to go like, you know, have dinner tonight, or, you know, grab a beer or something like that. And everywhere. Somebody. And the power of, you know, Instagram as well. If you check in in London, like at least 20 people will be like, hey, I'm here. Like, where are you at?
That is so
cool. It's pretty crazy. So
what a unique lifestyle to live.
Like, yeah, it's pretty
nice. I'm in Paris.
Yeah. You know,
and
if I don't do it, like my flight attendant, you know, like Nina, she can check in, and then her group of people might be there. And then we just go out as one big group. So there's, you know, there's flight crews all over the world at any given hour doing something, and they're all doing the same job.
Cool.
And it's nice because we all have something in common. We're all in the business.
Yeah. And you can relate to everything that's going on.
So then you just meet more and more flight crews and more pilots and more flight attendants. Then your network just keeps growing. It's it snowballs.
That's amazing.
So it's fun.
Looking back, and you really didn't know what you didn't know, right? As far as like being a pilot, you just took the first step. But along the way, when you were, I guess, in the grind or in the chase of like what you were doing, and then trying to navigate, you know, staying commercial or flipping over to charter, right? Were there any hard moments where you're like, you know what, maybe I should just go back to commercial? Or were you just like, I am all in all the time?
I was all in all the time. I definitely had some doubts. You know, I relied heavily on my friends, you know, for advice. When I definitely first went to China, I didn't know if it was for me. The pollution was off the charts. You know, you had to wear a mask. You could barely see each other walking down the streets. Because at this time, the pollution was horrible. And I was like, you know, did I really make the right decision? You know, but the money was so different than what I was making in the U.S. that I had no choice but to stay. Because for every 4 months that I worked in China was over a year's worth of salary in the U.S. So like, I was like, if I can do this for 1 year, I'm 2 years. You know, if I can do this for 4 years, I'm like a decade. You know, like it just started compounding. And so like, you know, after 1 year, I was like, oh, maybe it's time to go home. You know, and then the boss came to me and he would actually tell me personally, like, I don't want you to leave.
Wow.
So I became loyal to them.
Yes.
You know, so that sort of helped me, you know, like make the decision with staying. I definitely like question myself, you know, quite often. But luckily I had an amazing, you know, principal is what we call them, that I was flying for at the time. He was like, if you need any help with anything, like just ask. And that was like, that was so sincere for me.
Yeah.
So
helped you stay longer, but also like gave you the confidence to ask questions.
Gave me the peace of mind. You know, if I needed, like, I really needed help, like, you know, getting an apartment lease in Beijing. I don't speak Chinese, you know, how do I get a cell phone SIM card? You know, he would literally send like a driver or send like an assistant. They'd be like, yeah, let's get you a cell phone or let's get you an apartment. Like, it was like so cool.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing. And it's great to, I mean, I'm sure you still have so many of those friendships if you were to go to back to China.
Yeah, he still sends me a happy birthday every year. Like, it's, even though I haven't flown for him in so long, it's they still stay in touch. So it's pretty
nice. Wow, that's really special. Yeah. And I guess that's a good testament to people that do have so much money. They didn't get there themselves overnight either. But a lot of that, you can tell how they treat people over time, like why they have what they have.
Most of them are self-made, and when you work for the family office, you know, like as we call it, like you sort of like become part of the family, you know, and you know, they get so used to seeing you and trusting you, you know, at their lowest times and at their highest times, that, you know, you're always there in the back of their mind, you know, whether you don't see them for a decade. But, you know, if I was to ever see him check in Napa Valley, for example, I would reach out to him and be like, hey, you're here, you know, like, maybe I'm here. I'll go drive and meet him and, you know, have dinner or at least pay my respects.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. Is there like a certain quality or characteristic that you could say with the different families that you've flown for that define levels of success that they've all achieved? You know, it's something that they have in common.
Something that they all have in common.
It might be different that I wouldn't.
Yeah, I think they're all like, none of them sleep. that's like the number one thing that I've noticed with all of them.
Really?
Is they are up from probably 5, you know, a.m. to at least 11 p.m., almost 7 days a week. They rarely smile. They work very, very hard, and they're all quiet. I've actually never worked for one principal that was like, you know, no diamonds, no watches, no jewelry, no fashion. They're all very low key and very private and very soft spoken.
And they're all, just for the listeners, they're all culturally different.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I've flown for Russian billionaires, Ukrainian billionaires, Chinese billionaires. They're all very, very different, but they're all very same in that they work very hard. Because, you know, the pressure that they have, they could have, you know, 100,000 employees, 40,000 employees, you know, they carry
They
carry all of that risk. And I'm sure that keeps them up at night.
Wow. Well, for me, just growing my little mortgage business, you know, and I'm like, okay, to hire someone, that's another family that I'm feeding myself, you know.
Imagine 100,000 of those.
That's insane. Yeah. I probably wouldn't sleep either if it came down to that.
Right. So.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, with what's on the media now, especially with social media and Instagram, and you have all of these health gurus, right, that talk about the importance of sleep and getting your 7-8 hours and balance and all these things. But when you're like at the top 0.5% of the world, right, or whatever, like, you're operating on a totally different level.
They all have, you know, private doctors who take good care of them.
Yeah.
Like our flight attendant, for example, like, you know, she, you know, the boss's doctor can say he is straight keto. She will only feed keto, which is great because then she'll also feed me only keto. So, you know, I get to reap that benefit as well.
Here.
Yeah. So, you know, they are very strict in their diets. You know, they definitely are being well cared for and looked after. So it's nice. Someone's always out there taking really good care of them.
Right. Yeah. Now you're on a whole different level of healthcare.
For
sure. At the snap of your finger.
Yep.
Wow. So do you have any other goals that you want to accomplish now that you've kind of done it all?
I've kind of done it all. I'm really big into mentoring. You know, I mentor lots of young aviators. Lots of people reach out to me randomly, like, hey, you know, I met, you know, such and such mentioned you, like, I'm going through flight school. Can you help me? You know, and I don't know if you remember, I have a 17-year-old son who is working on his pilot's license now.
And that's got to be so special.
Now, like, none of this is about me. It's really about, like, I want Taylor to, like, sort of, like, follow in my footsteps.
Yeah.
So, like, that means the most to me, is to, like, sort of, like, you know, help him transition into a role like what I'm doing, you know, and that he doesn't have to go the particular
does
hard routes.
Does he realize
routes.
How cool you are?
I don't think he does. Yeah. So, but, you know, I don't want him to have to, like, take any of the hard paths, you know.
Yeah.
I want to, like, sort of, like, help guide him into success. And then my dream would obviously be to fly with him, which would be so cool.
That would be so special.
It'd be so special to me.
That's definitely, you got to, like, make that into documentary.
Yeah, right.
That would be so cool. Yeah, when that time comes.
That'd be pretty
sure.
cool. Yeah. Everywhere I go, people are always like, you should write a book.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
or have a podcast.
Yeah, or a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you would be really good at it, one, but I think you have so much life experience in so many different cultures and interacting with different people that you have so much to give, right?
Yeah. You know who I really like, you know, someone who did what I do, but non-aviation, was Anthony Bourdain. Mm-hmm. And I used to be obsessed with watching Anthony Bourdain because he really lives the lifestyle that we live, you know, travels the world, eats good food, like immerses himself with like the local cultures, you know, like, and I always like kind of seen myself like doing something like what he did, but you know, with a little bit of an aviation twist. So
yeah, which,
you know, would, podcast would be a good idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, just different ways, different media, right? Yeah. To get to different people, because I think everybody takes in information in different ways, and so if you're able to give that information in different ways,
absolutely,
you're reaching so many more people.
I think Instagram's really helped facilitate that for everyone. Like, everyone's reachable now, which is amazing.
Yeah, reachable, and then also too gives you the ability to develop and maintain relationships.
Absolutely.
With just like keeping tabs on them, like you and I over the last, you know, 20 years, it's like, oh yeah, I knew you were in China. I mean, I didn't talk to you. I mean, I don't think we ever had a phone conversation.
Never once.
Yeah. Ever. No. Literally just like the time that we met.
Yeah.
And, but then also knowing that you were over here, over there, California, I was like, weren't you in Texas at one point?
And I could be in several countries in one day. It's pretty crazy to fathom.
Yeah. Even now you're like, what's that show back in the day? Like, where's Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I feel like that's you. You're like all over the place. Yeah. I'm like, oh, now he's back.
I'm always like hashtag like catch me if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? No, for sure. Yeah. And then you like post your at Town Lake. I was like, oh, he's back.
I do 10 steps every morning.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it in.
Get it in.
How do you like living in Austin versus, I mean, you've been China, California, also Texas, Dallas, right?
Yep.
Area. So how do you like living here in Austin?
So I grew up in Kansas City, you know, originally. And, you know, there's a saying in Texas, you know, I wasn't born here, but I got here as fast as I could.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always knew that I wanted to be a Texan. And, you know, when my current principal transitioned to Austin from the Bay Area, like most of the tech guys did during COVID, because Austin was open. It was like the cool kids club, you know, for these types of people. You know, we got based here with the ability to commute. So I was commuting for a while, and that commute's a very tough commute. You know, it's across the country all the way to the Bay Area. And, you know, when I was in Austin, I noticed that I was having so much fun. Like, it's such a cool town. Everyone's so young. Everyone's, like, so friendly. And I never really felt like I was a Californian. I was just there for work. You know, I just came from China to California. And it just felt so temporary. And I kind of always wanted to get back to Texas. Yeah. And so recently, as you know, I made the decision to move to downtown.
Yeah.
And it's so fun. It's so cool.
There's just a...
My neighbors are cool. All my friends are cool. Like, it's just like the greatest thing to, I think, happen to me in this chapter of my life.
That's so awesome to hear that. I feel like there's almost, I don't know if you can call it magic, maybe, in the air with Austin, because everybody is here for either growth or opportunity, but there's this willingness to meet people, or openness to meet people, and everybody's looking to connect and network. But also, it's not like... not a transactional type of network when you meet people, but like, how can I help you?
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. And being on the other side of that table now, like, I don't really seek help because I'm sort of like, you know, I'm older now and more mature. And like, you know, I have my
we are,
you know, yeah. And so now people reach out to me for guidance. And like, I really like that. So it's pretty cool. Like, being a father now, like, I'm like, you know, people reach out to me all the time on Instagram, or like locally, like my front desk staff at my building, you know, like, hey man, like, you know, where'd you get your car? You know, or like, you know, like, what did you do to get that? You know, I love sharing my story.
By the way, and I do too. I love, like, I think you and I were having a conversation the other day about some of your neighbors and their cars too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do they do for work? You know,
they were so cool. They're my friends. They're going to watch this podcast.
Really? That's so awesome.
Yeah.
But of course you'd make friends with your new neighbors.
Yeah. It's hard not to when you have a Bugatti. Like, it was pretty crazy.
Really crazy. But also, like, you know, what do you do for work that you've that anybody that's accomplished that? And your current car is my sister's dream car. And when I was telling her that I was going to come interview you for the podcast and like what you drive, she's like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Do you think you'll let us sit in it?
And I'll let her take me for a drive in it.
Oh my God, don't tell her that.
That's how I roll. That's like how different I am.
Yeah. She would be like, what in the world? Maybe like a very not busy street.
Yeah, parking lot tour.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, knowing that that's out there to accomplish, and those are just materialistic things, but at the end they show the grind that people have been through and what you've accomplished,
right.
You know, it's like kind of what you can show on paper,
but,
and you've accomplished so much, but on the back end, like you said, you have like a heart to give back.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you're like, who wants this knowledge? Like, it's not just for me.
Everything I do and everything that I have now is for inspirational purposes.
Yeah.
Cause it means nothing to me. You know, it's like, I really do it for the young kid out there who is like, hey, like, I want to be you someday. You know, it's pretty cool. So,
You know, do you listen to Ed Mylett, that podcast?
Nope.
Okay. So he's a, I am now that I have a podcast, I'm like studying all these podcasts. Yeah. Right? I'm like, how do I become a great interviewer? But I was listening to Ed Mylett. He's a phenomenal interviewer, but also talking about, because he's multi-millionaire as well, owns like an island and cars and all the things, and talks about the materialistic side of that. And now it's like, it's meaningless outside of the fact of like being able to motivate the next generation, because there are a lot of people, because of social media and Instagram and people that you will rent a Porsche or whatever and post a picture with it and say that they got rich quick or whatever. And so to have somebody that's actually put in the work and has that and can show you the ropes, like, hey, it's not easy, but I can make it a less painful road for you, you know, and know that that's that it's real versus like, hey, you can just I'll get you to have a million followers on Instagram. Follow me because I have a Porsche.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I love your heart behind that. And that was like one of the big motivating factors after we first reconnected when you're here in Austin, just getting to know you as a person and like the person behind the social media that I followed for the last like 20 years, you know, and knowing where your heart is at now, because we've all kind of been through it over the last 20 years to have what you have, you know, or to have what we have. So what would you say to somebody that's even remotely interested in aviation? What would, as a mentor, what is your first piece of advice for somebody that, you know, maybe they don't want to make it a career just yet, or they're like, I don't know what would be that
nugget? I would probably say YouTube. You can literally search anything you want on YouTube. You know, YouTube's like a university nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to, you know, study a specific subject, I mean, you could literally go to YouTube and be like, should I go to flight school? And there'll probably be 1,000 videos like telling you if you should or should not, you know,
and
where should I go to flight school? You know, or aviation mentorship, you know, even if you search any of that, it's going to pop up like LinkedIn, for example. Like, you know, I have a LinkedIn page, like people reach out to me on there. You'll find programs of, you know, big groups of guys like me that are part of like a, you know, a system, you know, that's out there for young guys to, and it's free, you know, like, hey, I'm thinking about becoming a pilot. I know it's a big financial, you know, risk. Like, should I do it? We'll give them all of that, you know, information. So to the best we can.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, they have to be able to make that decision, but at least they can ask all of the questions that they want, where, you know, someone like me, I didn't get to ask any questions, you know, 20 years ago. So
yeah, there wasn't, I mean, 20 years ago, it feels like yesterday, but as far as in the age of information, right? Like, that is when information age took off
for
us. Yeah. And so, there were no resources to ask, like, okay, what's at the end of this
people,
rainbow?
Nowadays, if people reach out to me, I'll just be like, here's like 10 YouTube videos that like might answer some of your questions, you know, with regards to flight training, maybe even getting financial assistance to go to flight school, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, because there's like some pretty big hurdles that you have to, you know, sort of go through or, you know, or jump over to get to the point where you can actually start flight training. And I think that's usually the number one questions that I get is, how can I do it? I want to do it. How can I do it? And it's just, you know, bridging that gap.
Yeah. So would you say, like, now that you love this phase of life, right, of, like, now being able to, you've accomplished what you have the credentials, the accolades to be able to give information, right? Because now there's, like, this level of respect for you in the aviation world, like, okay, this guy has the answers, right? Yeah. What's next for you career-wise, not necessarily in giving up your time, but do you still see yourself staying here in Austin and like working in this space, or
I do. So I really want to call Austin home. I'm flying probably the nicest business jet in the entire world, and I fly for the most amazing Austinian family at this time. My personal goal would be to stay with them for as long as they're willing to have me. So now I'm sort of just like preserving what I have and just, you know, just sort of riding the wave. So you know, whatever happens next, you know, I'm totally open to, you know, what's whatever the next chapter, I guess, in my life. So whether that takes me back to Asia or it takes me to Europe, you just never know. So maybe early retirement. Yeah. You truly never know.
Early retirement. How old are you? Tell the people.
I'm 38.
He's relatively young.
I just got Botox for the first time. So
what was that experience
like? Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. These are highway miles.
Yeah. That's too funny. Yeah. You were, last time we talked, you mentioned that you're just in a really good spot as far as the people that you work for and the
totally at
that
peace
you're
at this
in.
Stage in my life, which is nice.
And that's amazing, because so many people coming, I mean, I can speak for myself when I say I had one career when I was in my 20s, and then now in my 30s, I'm a totally different industry, you know? So it's almost like I'm recreating myself in my 30s. And so to put in so much time that you have like throughout being, when did you get hired? When you were 19 years old?
19.
And then to 38, like people think that your career may have started when you were 24.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And you've really put in that time to be where you're at today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I tell a lot of these young individuals that I do mentor, like in your 20s, just learn. And then when you hit your 30s, you can drop the L.
Oh,
yeah. You can earn. You know, it's.
Oh, that's so good. That's going to be a quote.
Yeah. So I use that.
Yeah.
Which that, is nice.
Yeah.
And your network is your net worth, especially in this industry. So it's all about who you know and staying in touch. And, you know, it's all of the jobs that I've gotten the last, I would say, 7 years have all been word of mouth.
Wow.
So I haven't applied for a job. Like, everyone will, like, poach you, you know, per se. So.
Yeah. It's almost like, and I don't even know if this is very similar, but in the world of golf, my sister and my dad would have conversations, and my dad's like, you know, because there'd be, especially in the high school phase, there's people that are cheating and, like, you know, right. move their ball or whatever, and my dad would just say, like, get your score so low that nothing else will matter,
right.
you know? And almost like you in this industry, like, you just become the best. And, like, everything else will take care of itself.
Absolutely.
Like, the job opportunities, the moves that you would make will totally take care of itself if you just become the best version of yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you doing some golfing in this phase of life?
Well, I was, and then the heat hit. So I'm still getting used to this. Getting used to the humidity.
Were you here last year when we hit, like, the, I think it was, like, 45 days over 100 degree?
I was.
You were?
I was based here. I was coming in and out, obviously, from California. But okay. It's also very hot where I live in California, minus the humidity. But,
oh, okay.
You know, I love to golf.
Wait, what part of California?
El Dorado Hills.
Okay.
So it's actually in between San Francisco and Lake Tahoe.
Oh.
So the best skiing, and obviously San Francisco is amazing. So
interesting. Yeah. So I hadn't been to California, and I went to LA last weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, all of my LA friends are like, oh my gosh, weather's perfect. It's beautiful. And the first day, weather was not perfect. It was like 50 degrees. And I was like, I was just going based off of all of my friends' experiences that California has perfect weather and it's not temperamental. So I'm like, I didn't even check the weather.
Yeah.
And I should have. But it's 50 degrees, raining on a Friday. And then the next day was perfect.
Nice.
Like, sunny, a cool breeze, but it's still, like, warm enough to where you're not like, ooh, chilly, you know? So perfect. And I was like, oh, this is the weather my Californian friends talk about.
Right.
So the heat is coming here in Austin. It is not like that here.
We call the tax out there. We call it the weather tax.
The weather tax.
The weather tax.
That's so funny.
You have to pay for this amazing weather.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. They're pretty spoiled out there with the weather.
Yes. Yeah. And then you come here. Yeah. I've had some buyers that they're like, we're moving to Texas. And then after a couple of weeks here, they're like, yeah, we're putting our house back on the market and we're moving back to California
because
it's
tough.
Just so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if you just get on a boat maybe and you just don't move, it's not so bad.
Yeah, move into a building with a nice pool.
Yeah, that too.
That's
you
what
know?
I do, so
yeah.
It's good.
I had a friend of mine say, you know, do you just stay indoors from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and then you go outdoors like at night? And I was like, I mean, I enjoy the summer, but I think it just depends on.
I actually don't mind the heat. I actually like the heat. It's actually nice. So I do my walk every day, and, you know, during the day I might either at the pool. It's, you know, it's hot, but you can make do.
You can make do.
You can make do.
Dip in the water, get back out.
Iced coffee.
Get a tan.
Yeah,
iced coffee. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited for you know, what's been going on in your life, Josh, and just to kind of like peel back the layers of how long we've known each other and everything that you've accomplished along the way. And knowing that I'm like one of your biggest cheerleaders.
I appreciate
on
it.
On behind the scenes, you know, anytime you post that you're anywhere accomplishing anything or doing anything, career-wise and even family-wise as well, to be able to manage everything that you have. It's been a pleasure just being a friend over the last couple years.
Likewise. It's been amazing also seeing you grow.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Being an independent businesswoman, you know, and having your own business is it's amazing.
I appreciate that.
Remember when you were a student?
Yeah.
Twice. Twice.
Yeah. Graduating high school and then in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just goes to show, because did you ever go back to school?
Never.
Like,
didn't
university?
Have to.
Yeah.
Nope.
So it's just a prime example of, you know, my parents have never really been big believers in education or not. You know, as far as raising all three of my siblings, if we decided to go to school, fantastic. That's your rite of passage. And if not, that's also your choice and your rite of passage.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I didn't have the time. And also, you know, every type of aircraft that we fly is its own school in its own like way. Yeah. So, you know, you have to go to school for 30 days and you get, you know, every stamp that we get on our license is sort of like getting like an MBA, you know, on the wall. So it's, you know, I do go to school twice a year.
Your own university.
Yeah, yeah. I go to school twice a year, you know, but, you know, just for like 1 week at a time, kind of like CEUs, as you would probably call it, you know.
Yeah.
But I never had time to go to like back to university. Plus, there's always that cost first reward. And there was going to be no reward for going back to school. So,
you know. And especially, I mean, now more than ever, maybe in our generation growing up, it was a little bit different when kids like chose not to go to school.
Right.
You were like going against the grain. But now more than ever, it's never been more meaningless, I feel like, to have a bachelor's degree. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like another paper that you get in today's day and age.
Most of the billionaires that I fly for never finished college.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
But to be able to say that, like, you can or cannot reach a level of success because you have a degree or don't have a degree.
Absolutely.
Is meaningless. So anybody that's listening to this, if school isn't your thing and you've been trying to make it your thing, try other avenues. And if it is your thing, fantastic. You know, we need doctors in this world.
Right, we do.
You know, we need CPAs in this world. We need, you know, all the professionals.
Yep.
But know that that doesn't have to be your ticket to accomplish a level of success. Like,
exactly.
Just like, I mean, you're a prime example of that.
You know, I get a lot of people always ask me that, like, hey, I'm not really good at school. I'm like, just do something that requires a license.
Mm.
You know, whether you're a mortgage broker, you know, or a real estate agent or a pilot, you know, or a plumber, or like they can make a ton of money. You know, you don't have to go the 4-year route.
Right.
Most of my friends that went the 4-year route, they graduated and they had, you know, you can get a 4-year degree in basket weaving.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, what are you going to do?
Or a 4-year degree and then never use it again.
Exactly.
Which is what I've done.
Yep. And most of the people that I they do nothing in their degree field.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's me.
Yep. But you meet people along the way, and that's the most important part about going to university is your network.
Yes.
So, you know, with social media now and with YouTube, you can do both of those without, you know, wasting a ton of money as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You know, that's a phenomenal example or phenomenal point to that is your network. Like, if you're going to go to school, you get the degree, but also really focus on that networking piece.
Absolutely.
Because you just never know who or what people will become.
Yep.
Yeah. That's for you as a dad with your kids and, you know, your son wanting to become a pilot and stuff. What's your take as you're like parenting on education?
To be more of a mentor than more of a like an authoritative, you know, figure, you know, for example, like I want, you know, like Taylor, for example, to be able to come to me and, you know, hey, Dad, I need advice, you know, and not be like, well, as your father, you know, it's more like, hey, this is what I think you should do. You know, and if I don't have the answers, maybe, you know, I would maybe look this up on YouTube or like ask one of my, you know, close friends, like, hey, what should he do? You know? So because I don't always have the answers.
Right.
And it's OK to admit that.
Well, and as parents, I'm sure you don't have a lot of the answers.
Yeah, you don't, you know, but, you know, in aviation, like, you know, if we never know the answer to a question, we always say, well, I know how to find it.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing.
I feel like that's the greatest life skill to have.
Just being able to find the information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be able to find the information. And if you are that person that can find the information, you've already separated yourself.
Yep. Exactly.
With the, I don't know if it's the 80-20 rule or the 20-80 rule. I don't know. Something like that. But yeah.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for being on. Is there any last piece of advice that we haven't already talked about? Any truth that you've discovered in your grind and in your chase that you wanted to mention on the podcast before we
I would just say, like, you know, most of everything that you do and experience in life is how you react to it.
Mm.
You know, you can the winds will never change, but you can adjust your sails. I just read that the other day and it was so important to me. And I go back and I keep reading that.
Yeah. Say that again.
So the winds will never change, but you can always adjust your sails.
Dang. I hope everybody heard that.
Yeah. So just, you know, be willing to adapt and be a chameleon.
Yeah.
That's sort of my motto.
A big life. I mean, that's kind of what you've done.
Just be a chameleon.
Yeah.
Yep. Just show up and, you know, look good and be sharp and, you know, smile.
That's literally you.
Smile. Yeah. So, yeah, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. It works and it'll take you really far in this life. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Josh, for sharing your heart and a little piece of what you do.
Appreciate you having
your
me.
Accomplishments. I hope that the listeners will just take one little nugget and run with it because there are so many little bombs that you dropped along the way and so many life lessons that we can take. So looking forward to touching base with you in a couple of months and seeing where you're at, if things have changed for you or if you have any other new directions in your life of where you're wanting to go and what you're wanting to accomplish, especially in like the mentorship space. But
sounds good.
We'll definitely touch base. Thanks for being us.
Thanks for having me.